Welcome to Tardi Mechanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Adina Schmimann, and I hope that you will join us today at the Siyum for Malachim Aleph with Mrs. Liat Meyerfeld. Sign up at ouwomen.org/siyum and put June 5th and 6th on your calendar. If you're a Nachyomi listener, be a Nachyomi supporter. Support the OU Women's Initiative so that we can continue to support you. And now for today's Perek.
Welcome to Torati Mechanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Sarah Malka Winter, and today we will be learning Sefer Melachim Beis, Perek Beis, Chapter 2. After Perek Aleph with its dramatic punishments, Perek Beis, Chapter 2 tells the miraculous story of Eliyahu's ascent to heaven in a fiery chariot. And it is, of course, also the story of the transition of leadership from Eliyahu to Elisha. This transition is described with a journey through four places and a truly enigmatic conversation, first between Eliyahu and Elisha, and then between Elisha and the Bnei Nevi'im. What makes it all the more mysterious is the fact that these conversations are repeated again and then again. Our story begins with Eliyahu and Elisha leaving from Gilgal, and so in Pasuk Beis. Vayomer Eliyahu el Elisha, Shevna po ki Hashem shlachani ad Betel. Vayomer Elisha, Chai Hashem v'chei nafshecha im e'ezveka, vayerdu Betel. Eliyahu says to Elisha, please stay here, for God has sent me to Betel. And Elisha says, by the life of God and by your life, if I would leave you. And they both went down to Betel. When they arrive in Betel, there was a group of Bnei Nevi'im who ask Elisha in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, Hayadata ki ayom Hashem lokeach es adonecha me'al roshecha? Vayomer gam ani adati, hecheshu. Do you know that today God will take your master from on your head? And he said, yes, I also know. Be quiet. The verse does not tell us what the purpose of going to Betel is or what they did there, only that this entire interaction between Eliyahu and Elisha and Elisha and the Bnei Nevi'im repeat itself two more times on its way to Yericho and then to the Yarden. What is the purpose of these journeys? Abarbanel explains that each of these places holds such historical significance. Gilgal, as the place the Jewish nation made a bris in Sefer Yehoshua with Hashem, that they would keep the Torah in Eretz Yisrael, represented the koach, the power of Torah. Betel, as the site of the first prophecy that Yaakov Avinu experienced, represented Koach Nevuah, the power of prophecy. And Yericho, that first city that was conquered absolutely miraculously, Koach Nes, the power of miracles. And Abarbanel explains that Elisha, knowing that he was to take over and become the new Navi to inspire the Jewish people, was nervous. They walk through Gilgal, and Eliyahu says to Elisha, stay here. You can lead the Jewish people. I leave you with the koach of Torah. But Elisha said, I can't do this. I need more help. I'm not you. And this position is such a difficult one. So Eliyahu brings him to Betel and says, I leave you with the power of prophecy. And finally, the power of Nes, of miracle in Yericho. But as we will see, Elisha is still afraid. And what about Elisha's conversation with the Bnei Nevi'im? The Malbim explains that Eliyahu HaNavi was unique, and due to his greatness, many Bnei Nevi'im were able to attain prophecy kind of through him. And that now that he was leaving, they were sensing that they were losing that divine closeness and felt the effects, but they wanted to know if Elisha, who was much closer to Eliyahu, was sensing it as well, because that would indicate that this is happening today. The Malbim also explained that what was troubling the Bnei Nevi'im was the question of why they were losing Eliyahu. Was this a punishment from God? Did they no longer deserve the great Eliyahu's presence? Was Hashem taking away their light because of their behavior? If that would be the case, it would be likely that Hashem would not inform Elisha of this, leaving them, as Malbim writes, to stumble, leaderless and alone. And if that were the case, we need to storm the heavens to annul this decree. We need to do teshuvah. And Elisha assures them, Gam ani yadati. I know. I have been prepared for this moment. You can be quiet. You don't need to fear. You don't need to cry. This is not a punishment. It is just Eliyahu's time. Verse 7 tells us that there were 50 B'nai Nevi'im who stood at the Yarden watching them. And in verse 8, a miracle. Vayikach Eliyahu es adarto, vayiglom vayakez hamayim, vayechatsu hena vehena, vayavru shnehem bacharava. Eliyahu takes his cloak, folds it, hits the water, and the Yarden splits, here and here, and both of them cross it on dry land. And as they were crossing, in verse 9, Eliyahu asks Elisha, Sha'al ma'aeselach b'tarim alakach me'imach. Ask me, what can I do for you before I'm taken from you? Vayomer Elisha, vihina pi shnayim beruchacha elai. And Elisha responds, can I have pi shnayim, double of your spirit to me? In verse 10, Eliyahu says, Hikshisa lishol, you've asked something very difficult. But imtere usilu kach meitach, if you see me being taken from you, yihi lechakein, you will receive this. Ve'im ayin, and if not, lo yihye, it will not be. Okay, what is going on here? What is Elisha asking for? What is this pishnayim? Chazal explained this to mean, I want to be able to do double the miracles that you did. And indeed, we count that Eliyahu did 8 miracles and Elisha 16. The Malbim explains this idea a few different ways. One, I want your spirit. I want your understanding of God and prophecy and Torah. But I don't want to lose my own perception of Hashem. My own understanding is something I worked very hard for. So I feel like I need yours, but I would like to somehow still keep mine. Or he was saying, you are Pishnaim of all the other prophets. You are doubly as great. I want your double. But the Barbanel has a very unique way of reading this pasuk. He understands P literally as mouth. Elisha is the closest student of Eliyahu. And Elisha had left his parents in order to follow Eliyahu back in Malachim Aleph. This moment of Eliyahu's departure is also a very painful moment of separation for Elisha. And he cries out and says, you ask me what to give me as you will leave me? I don't want you to leave me. Please promise me that you will come back and talk to me. I want our pishnayim, our dialogue, to continue even after your ascent to the heavens. And Eliyahu responds, this is difficult, because I cannot promise this to you. It depends on your level. But if you will see me after I leave, then you will know that you will have achieved it. And then in Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, Vayihi hema holchim haloch v'daber, they were walking and talking, v'hine rechav esh v'susei esh, v'yafridu bein shnehem. A chariot of fire and horses of fire appear and separate between the two of them. Vayya'al Eliyahu basa'ara hashamayim. And Eliyahu ascends in a storm to the heavens. The Malbim shares that in this ascent, Hashem allowed Eliyahu to experience all 4 elements of nature, fire, water, wind, and earth, to demonstrate that Eliyahu had conquered his nation. And in verse 12, Velisha ro'eh v'hu mitza'ek, Elisha sees and cries, Avi, Avi, Rechev Yisrael ufarashav, my father, the chariot of Israel and its horsemen. V'lo ra'ahu od, and he did not see him anymore. V'yachazek bivgadav, he took hold of his clothing, v'yikra'im lishnayim kra'im, and tore it into 2 pieces. So we see that he calls Eliyahu his father, and he calls him Rechev Yisrael, Ufarashav, chariot of Israel and its horsemen. Rashi quotes Targum Yonasan, Rebbe, Rebbe, you have won more battles for the Jewish people with your prayers than all of our chariots and horsemen. You were our army. And he tore his clothes into 2 pieces. Radak quotes the Gemara Moed Katan, that we learn 2 halachos from here. One, that a student tears after the death of his Rebbe, and 2, that the tear remains forever. We don't re-sew it. A beautiful symbolic message that the loss is real and tangible and, in a sense, irreplaceable. And then in verse 13, Elisha lifts the cloak of Eliyahu that had fallen and stands at the shore of the Yarden. Malbim comments that this same Adaris, this cloak, that Eliyahu had used to shield himself in Sefer Melachim Aleph at Har Chorev, when he had experienced God on such a deep level that it was too powerful. He had to use this Adaris to shield himself from the intense spirituality that he was experiencing. Now Eliyahu doesn't need a shield anymore. He doesn't need a mask. And so he drops the cloak. Abarbanel has been following this story as the story of transition of leadership from Eliyahu to Elisha. Reminds us that this is the second time that Eliyahu had thrown his Adaris to Elisha. Back in Melachim Aleph, he had thrown it to him to inform him that he will be the next leader. And now that it is happening, Elisha once more picks up that Adaris that Eliyahu throws down. And he hits the water in Pasuk Yadalid, verse 14, but nothing happens. It's only when he cries out in verse 14, Ayei Hashem Elokei Eliyahu, where is God, the God of Eliyahu, that the waters split for him. Rashi explains that when Elisha split the Yarden, he did so alone. He did it with his own zchus. And so this was a greater miracle than when Eliyahu had split it, actually in the merit of both of their zchuyot. The Abarbanel says, Elisha, the bereft student, so feeling the loss of his Rebbe Eliyahu, was told here that although Eliyahu would not no longer be here, Elokei Eliyahu is always here. And Radak shares, interestingly, that actually, when Elisha cries out, it was Eliyahu who returned in his spiritual form to split the Yarden. In verse 15, the B'nai Nevi'im, who had been standing at the Yarden, cry out, Nacha Ruach Eliyahu al Elisha. The spirit of Eliyahu has rested on Elisha. They come before Elisha and they bow before him. But then, in verse 16, they say to him, Hinei Nayeshes Avadecha Chamishim Anashim B'nai Chayil. We have 50 men, strong men. Yelchuna vayivakshua sadonecha, should they go look for your master? Penisa o ruach Hashem vayashlicheu b'chad harim o b'chad hageos. Maybe a wind of God has lifted him and thrown him on one of the mountains or one of the valleys. And Elisha responds, Lo sishlachu, do not send. Everyone is struck by this verse. Hadn't Elisha had so many conversations with the B'nai Nevi'im where they told him again and again that Eliyahu was going to be taken on this day? How could they not know where he was? Mitzudas David tells us they knew he was taken. They were looking for his body. They hadn't seen Eliyahu's ascent like Elisha had. They were looking for his body to bury him. Radak explains that, as is clear in Melachim Aleph, Eliyahu had many times been flown with the wind of Hashem from one area to another, that these B'nai Nevi'im had misunderstood. They didn't realize that Eliyahu would be taken from this world. They thought Hashem was taking him with a sa'ara, a storm, to somewhere else. They were offering to go find him. But Rashi says no. This prophecy that Eliyahu in his greatness was able to share with so many B'nai Nevi'im, this is not going to happen anymore. And these B'nai Nevi'im are now losing their prophecy. And they no longer know today what they knew yesterday. They had like prophetic amnesia. And this explains why Elisha does not just tell them, Oh, I saw Eliyahu taken away. Mitzudas David explains it was his anava. He was compelled by humility and sensitivity to hide the miraculous vision he had been privy to from these B'nai Nevi'im who could no longer see. But in Pasuk 17, verse 17, by Yiftzuru bo ad bosh, they beg him until bosh, until it got late, or like Rashi explains, until he was embarrassed. For to these B'nai Nevi'im, Elisha's behavior was actually confusing and troubling. It almost seemed like he didn't want to find Eliyahu. Is he power hungry and wants the crown of leadership? So finally, Vayomer shlachu, he said, send. Vayishlachu chamishim ish, they sent 50 men, And they searched for 3 days, and they did not find him. So he does let them search, but of course they don't find Eliyahu. And they returned to him while he was in Yericho. And he says to them, in verse 18, Halo amarti alecham al telechu, didn't I tell you not to go? With a little message of, you are going to need to start trusting me and listening to me. I know of what I speak. In verse 19, we see Elisha in his role as true leader and benefactor of the Jewish people. He has returned to Yericho, where the people of Yericho share with him that although they love living in Yericho, they have a problem. Hinena moshav ha'ir tov kasher odani ro'eh v'hamayim ra'im v'ha'aretz mishakales. Living in the city is good, as my master sees, but the water is bad, and the earth has been burying its inhabitants. Chazal comment on the ridiculousness of their statement. How can they say that living in Yericho is good if the water is poisonous and people are literally dying? This gives us an insight into human nature. Chin makom al yoshveha. People like where they live. People are not ever objective about their hometown. Abarbanel explains that Yericho was the city that Yehoshua had put into Cherem. It was never supposed to be built, and it was rebuilt in Melachim Aleph, but to indicate Hashem's displeasure with its existence, Hashem had made the water undrinkable. And now Elisha will perform his second miracle. In verse 20, he asks for a new jar, places salt in it, and in verse 21, pours salt into the mouth of the water and declares that Hashem has said, Repisi lamayim ha'ela. Lo yihiyu misham od mavas umishakales. I have healed these waters. There will be no more death from there. And the waters were healed until today, as Elisha had spoken. Many of the commentaries comment on the similarity between this miracle of Elisha to the miracle performed by Moshe on the waters of Marah, and how Hashem demonstrates this double miracle, not just making the water drinkable, but using as a medium something that should have made the water undrinkable. Think of the desalination plants all over the world just to remove salt. This beautiful story of Elisha helping, enhancing, even saving the lives of the people of Yericho is followed by a very painful one. In verse 23, he goes from there to Beit El, but as he is walking up the path, Na'arim kitanim, young lads, walk out of the city and begin to mock him and say to him, Alei kereach, alei kereach, go up, baldy, go up, baldy. Who were these? Chazal teaches they were not children or lads, rather na'arim from the language of shaken off, that they had shaken off mitzvos, and that kitanim, they had little faith. Why did they call him baldy? Mitzudas David explains that they are contrasting him to Eliyahu and saying, you are so different from Eliyahu, you're nothing like him. Or they were saying, Alei, go up to the heavens like Eliyahu, who needs you? Why did they hate him so much? What had he done to them? Rashi gives us an insight into their behavior, and it is truly a sad statement. Rashi tells us that these men had a water business. They used to supply water to the people of Yericho who had no healthy water to drink. And now that Yericho had its own water, they had lost their business. And so this story of salvation, of life to them, from their selfish perspective, they did not see, wow, people of Yericho are going to stop dying. They saw, we're going to lose money. We can't sell water to Yericho anymore. We're going to have to start a new business. Who needs you, Elisha? Why are you getting involved with our business? In verse 24, it says, Vayifen acharav vayir'im. He turned behind him and he looked at them. Vayikalalim b'shem Hashem and cursed them in the name of God. Vateitzena shtayim dubim min hayar. Two bears leave the forest. Vatevakana mehem arba'im ushnei iladim. And break from them 42 children. Rashi says he looked into their future and saw that no good would ever come from them. And Radak shares that Chazal are divided whether this was a miracle, a nes, or a miracle within a miracle, a nes besoch nes. Either this forest had never had wild animals, or there had never been a forest here at all, lo dubim velo ya'ar, which actually has become part of the Hebrew vernacular. But Radak also shares that although they may have deserved this death, and although Elisha may have looked into their future, Although Hashem clearly allows this miraculous punishment to happen, Elisha himself will be punished for this act, and one of the three illnesses that Elisha will suffer will be because of this event. And with that, this very eventful Perek Beis, Chapter 2, ends. Thank you for studying together Le'iloi Nishmot, Imahotenu Hayikarot, Esther Oppenheimer, Aleha HaShalom, and Sarah Schenker, Aleha HaShalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generation.